Advanced Studio Classroom is on the air. It's time in advance to talk about the Northern Lights again. And we have with us today
Simon Stops
and Linda
and Doris. So listen in as we talk about it. It is interesting to talk about the Northern Lights. It makes you kind of want to go see them again, doesn't it, Linda?
Yeah, actually, they're very, very cool to see. Mm-hmm. I was just thinking about the cold. I'd like to see them without the cold.
And I would like to ride in that little buggy that they have, you know, that kind of
the tundra buggy.
Mm-hmm. And I kind of like to see the polar bears, take pictures of them.
Okay.
Can we feed them?
What are you doing?
Yeah.
In October, it's time
November.
To go.
It is time to go.
Okay, what are you doing next week?
Well, I have to probably make some more radio programs, but aside from that, but it's fun to talk about it. We could be armchair travelers, right?
Yes.
And look at the pictures. That's what we'll have to do. So we're talking about this article about the Northern Lights, and it's on pages 12 and 13. And yesterday, we got a good glimpse of where it is. Where is this all taking place?
Well, this article is set in Churchill, Manitoba, in Canada.
Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of good words in it. There's explanations in your magazine. You can look them up. And you need exposure to a lot of English. We talked about exposure on a camera. That's different. What does exposure mean on a camera anyway?
Well, if you have a camera, the exposure is the amount of time that the film, now that it's digital, but that part of it that's going to take the photo is open to the light when you're making the photo.
Mm-hmm. And then when we closed yesterday, we did talk a little bit about what you could see and want to photograph this. And we usually call this the aurora or the aurora borealis. Is that a Latin word? It sounds like it, or Greek or something. It's a different kind of word, isn't it? Aurora borealis. It doesn't sound like English to me, but what does it really mean?
Well, it's just the technical scientific name for Northern Lights.
Mm-hmm. Right. Northern Lights are easy to remember, though. But in case you see those words, you know what they mean. Right.
Usually you'll see them in a scientific journal. And it just talks about the patterns of the colored lights that go across the sky.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think it would be good to take pictures of that. And just the adventure itself might be kind of fun, riding that funny bus and getting up there. But you do have to have warm clothes. And we're going to talk about some of the things you need as we open our lesson today, open our magazines on page 12. We're going to talk about the locations and the equipment and some of the things you need so you can get ready. Okay? So let's read the first column.
The locations. These can be found mostly in a ring about 1,500 miles from the North and South Poles. In North America, this means Fairbanks, Alaska, Churchill, Manitoba, Yellowknife, and the Northwest Territories. The equipment. You'll need a camera that lets you open the shutter for at least 30 seconds or a bulb setting. A way to turn off autofocus. You won't be able to focus on anything at night, just set it for infinity. And a cable release to trip the shutter. You'll want lots of well-charged batteries and memory cards. Hand warmers for the batteries, your feet and hands, a very sturdy tripod, and a small flashlight or, even better, a headlamp.
So we see that the aurora borealis can be found mostly at the North Pole and the South Pole, okay?
Right.
And in North America, which is where we're focusing on, it says it goes down to Fairbanks, Alaska, to Churchill, Manitoba, Yellowknife, well, that's near the Northwest Territories. But it also comes down further. If there are solar storms on the sun that come down from the sun, then it can be seen as far south as China or Central Europe. Or, you know, I'm from the United States, so it even came down
right.
That far.
We can see them in Seattle sometimes.
Right. But we do live in the northern part of the United States.
Right. The southern people can't see them.
No, not in the southern, that okay. area. If you live in Australia or New Zealand, you can also see them coming up from the South Pole.
I notice a lot of these names here, like Yellowknife and all. Those are names that were given to those towns by Indian people. When you see Yellowknife, I think about the indigenous people that had some of those
definitely.
Names. Right?
Right.
Okay, well, that's, you can kind of see where you could see them. But what kind of equipment do you need?
Well, there's lots of stuff. And you'll notice as you read through this paragraph that a lot of it is about the problem of taking pictures at night.
Mm-hmm.
When you take pictures at night, you have to leave the camera exposed longer. And so if you touch it, you'll get blurry pictures. And so you see that in here. They say you need a camera that lets you open the shutter for at least 30 seconds, meaning you have to take a very long picture.
But
more
if you're holding the camera,
seconds.
It might shake, so wouldn't you have to put it on a tripod then?
Well, that's right. They mention here you need a very sturdy tripod.
Mm-hmm.
They also say you need a cable release, which is kind of a wire that comes out of the camera, so you don't touch the camera to push the button. Instead, you push this thing on a wire and
I don't have one of those, do you?
No.
I just have the plain point-and-shoot camera.
Same here. But yeah. David has, my
I'm
husband
I'm sure
has.
The people that are photographers
yes.
have all of those kind of things, you know.
They use some interesting words in this paragraph, too. They say, you won't be able to focus on anything at night, just set it for infinity. And infinity is an interesting word because
yes.
it means forever.
Mm-hmm.
They don't really mean set your camera for forever.
Or for any distance, it goes as far as you can think of, right?
That's right. Yes. They just mean take a very, very long picture.
Well, usually you say 100 feet or so far, but infinity just means any distance as far as you can think or see, right?
Right, because you're obviously trying to capture the sky, the light in the sky,
mm-hmm.
so yes.
Well, you also need some batteries because remember that, you know, you're way out there in the wilderness and you always have to have, you know, batteries with you that are well-charged batteries. And what does the memory card do?
Well, the memory card is so you can keep as many pictures as you want, right? You don't want to run out of
space.
Yeah,
that's where you
for your pictures.
Actually pictures are kept is on this little memory card, right?
Right.
And some of them are bigger and some are smaller capacity. You probably need several of those. But besides what you need for your camera, it's just hand warmers for the batteries.
I thought that was pretty interesting.
I thought that was funny, too, because you need them for your hands. But mm-hmm. why would you – what happens to the batteries? They get frozen, too?
Well, cold makes batteries drain their energy more quickly.
Mm-hmm.
And so I guess in this kind of cold, you're going to want to keep your batteries warm so they stay fresh and you can use them.
Well, that reminds me of this area. Even where I'm from, you know, in the wintertime, you have to plug in your car battery or your car won't start.
Yeah, that's true.
And that battery heats the oil so the oil is – you know, can flow more easily.
That's interesting.
And
we never think of that.
Well, this really does work. I remember camping when it was cooler weather in Canada and having your flashlight die.
Mm. Oh.
The batteries stop working in your flashlight. And I remember taking out the batteries and warming them up in your hands and putting them back in, and then they
really?
Work again. Yeah.
See, it takes a Canadian to know all that. Right.
Cold weather skills.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Survival.
Well, but you also have to keep your feet and your hands warm, too, because you can get what we call frostbite, and that's very bad, too.
Yeah, that's
right. If you don't keep your hands. Well, and don't you have to even keep your face kind of warmed up with a scarf sometimes when it's too cold and there's a wind blowing?
Definitely. Otherwise, a lot of people get frostbitten noses, you know, because they don't think about that part of it. So you have
what
to
happens then if it gets frostbite?
Well, that means it's getting frozen. So the skin is frozen, so you have to thaw it out carefully. Sometimes you don't want that.
You can have frostbite for a little while, but if your skin is frozen for a long time, then...
Then you lose those
you lose
fingers.
Your blood
or,
vessels.
Yeah.
And,
yeah, you lose those toes.
Well, that's scary. Okay, we'll take the hand warmers and everything and your tripods and little flashlights and even keep the flashlight warm and even a headlamp so you can... See, because you're out there at night.
Well, I think the headlamp is interesting. That's really just a flashlight that you wear on your head.
Sure.
But I
like
think
like miners wear when they go down the mines.
Yeah, that's right. It's interesting because you can adjust your camera and get ready for your pictures without holding your flashlight.
That's good.
That's what I was going to say because you need both of your hands for this. But I also think that's one of the reasons, you know, now that I'm looking at a cable release to trip the shutter, you don't want to leave your hands exposed too long.
Yeah.
So if you're wearing gloves and trying to mess around with your camera,
it's not easy.
So this will give you a better chance to actually take a photo.
In other words, it's cold. And you're going to find out what else you need as far as clothing then. Let's read and find that out.
The clothing. You'll need warm underwear, a sweater, thick insulated pants and parka, a balaclava to cover your entire head and a neck gaiter, plus a hat, thin inner gloves, thick outer gloves, and a pair of seriously insulated boots. The technique. Your ISO, speed of capture, depends on how bright the lights are. Try different settings, starting with ISO 400 and going up even to 3200 if your camera will do that. Open your shutter to its widest setting. Set your shutter speed for 20 seconds to start. Turn down your LCD screen so it won't blind you, but you can still tell what you are getting. Turn on noise reduction if your camera has it.
So now we're looking at this clothing. And if you live in a warm climate, probably nobody has any idea what these items are. But
no.
But these are useful terms anyway because, you know, it's popular these days for people to go visit places like Japan in the winter.
And go skiing.
Go skiing or see the snow. And so all of these items of clothing are very useful if you're going to a cold place.
Well, if you're going to buy underwear, I would suggest you buy thermal underwear. Thermal has to do with heat, doesn't it? And thermal underwear is like two pieces of cloth together and it keeps the heat in. It's quite different. It's not as thick as the old wool underwear. It's kind of scratchy. It's not very good. But thermal underwear is thinner and it keeps you warm.
Yeah, in the last 4 or 5 years, they've even come out with a newer kind of technique. When you move long underwear, which you wear on the inside, and when you move your body, it creates friction and it keeps you very warm. So you definitely need that, and you need a sweater, preferably a wool sweater, and because wool, of course, keeps the heat in, and thick insulated pants and parka.
So thick pants, that would be like, you know, ski pants, though, but how could they be insulated? What would that mean?
They say when you're trying to keep warm, you need to have a lot of layers so you can trap air between it. And so I actually have some insulated pants, and basically they're just pants that have a little liner inside.
Okay.
So it's kind of like two pairs of pants sewn together.
But usually I think of ski pants. You know, usually.
But they have insulation in them. Some of them have a little bit of another layer in them.
Right. I mean, that's what they are, but it depends upon what that layer is on the inside as well.
When I think of insulation, I always think about buildings. Like, even if you're in a climate where it gets very hot and you have a roof on your house, it's not insulated, it's too hot. So you put another layer on to keep the sun out. So insulation just protects you from whatever the outside is, heat or cold, doesn't
it? And I like this next word, and parka. Do you have a parka, Simon?
I don't, not at the moment. I've been in sunny Taipei for many years now. And so
you don't need a parka.
No parka. But it's interesting because often when people are studying English, they learn words like coat and jacket and maybe ski jacket or winter coat. But a parka is a whole different level of keeping you warm.
It is.
We often have hoods on our jackets even here because it keeps the rain off. You pull the hood on over your head. But a parka is a thicker winter one. Usually has fur around it, right?
Yeah, it's usually long enough that it covers sort of down onto your legs, and it often will have fur around the hood, things like that.
It is designed to keep you very warm.
There are actually some pictures of parkas in the magazine here.
Okay. Yeah. So those are kind of some things you need to think about. And so don't just say, well, I'm going to just hop a plane from Asia and go over there. You better get some of these things ready before you get there. Maybe they sell them, though, because a lot of people, if they don't have them, probably the stores make a lot of money selling them over there.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure they do.
They might be expensive.
And there are a lot of they are expensive no matter where you buy them.
Mm-hmm.
But then we see some additional items that they say are interesting, like this balaclava to cover your entire head.
Yeah, I think in the U.S. people usually use the term ski mask instead. And probably most of our listeners have seen this not watching sort of movies about the winter, but instead watching movies about robberies.
Right, they always have something over their head so you can't see who they are.
A balaclava is the kind of mask that a robber will put on that covers their face, covers everything but their eyes.
And their mouth.
But I think you have to keep your eyes covered, too, because of the glare. You know, you've got to be careful you don't, you know, get your eyes looking at that snow too much.
Right? Yep.
Okay. Well, those are some things you need. And insulated boots, that word insulation again, boots with some kind of lining in them, usually fur or something like that. Okay, that's enough about the clothes. But what about the other things, your technology? What about your ESO speed? It says the speed of capture.
Right. The ISO, actually, it means International Standards Organization, and they actually set the speed at what the speed of capture is. It's standardized across, I suppose, cameras. So the speed of capture is how long your shutter is open, which I thought was interesting.
Well, now these lights kind of move a little bit, so you have to be sure that your shutter speed won't make the picture blurry, right?
I think that's one of the big challenges about taking photos of the northern lights. Like here in Asia, we often see probably a rainbow, and it doesn't move. But northern lights kind of dance. So if you're watching them, you'll see them kind of lightly dance across the sky. And so it's a challenge.
Yeah, because it's dark.
You better have a video camera.
That's right. It's dark, so you need a longer exposure. But at the same time, you're taking a picture of something that's moving.
Mm-hmm. Well, a lot of cameras might have this ISO of 400, but if you go up to 3,200, I'm not sure very many cameras will do that. That's really pretty high.
Think of the $6,000 Nikon.
Oh, yeah, well, they probably could do it right. So what do you do then? You open your shutter?
Well, it says you open your shutter to its widest setting, meaning it takes the longest picture.
Mm-hmm.
And then you set your shutter speed for 20 seconds to start.
That's a long time for a camera.
It is.
Yeah. You turn down your LCD screen so it won't blind you. If you've ever turned on a phone in the dark, right? You know, the light, it seems very, very bright.
Right.
Yeah. And so you've got to turn down that screen. And it says you want to be able to tell what you're getting.
Well, and you can even turn on your noise reduction if your camera has it. Why would you want to turn that on?
Well, by noise here, they're not talking about like a sound. Instead, they're talking about like blurriness in the picture. So digital noise,
camera
noise.
You sound like a real photographer, Simon. Right?
I've had some wonderful opportunities here at Studio Classroom.
To learn about all these different
reading all
things,
kinds
right?
of interesting articles.
Okay. Well, anyway, these are just little things that have to do with the equipment and all. But they always have some ways for you to find out what your camera can do, and it probably has a manual. So let's read on to the next section.
Read the manual before you go. In dead dark, you totally forget where everything is on your camera. So you really need to practice, grope, and memorize. Once out there, find something to frame, trees, a building, even people. And when you go inside, there's usually a yurt, building, or snow coach for warming people. Do not bring your camera in, unless you have it wrapped in plastic or in a bag to keep condensation off. Then go home and make all your friends jealous.
Well, it's always good to read the manual. Sometimes when you get a new gadget, whether it's a camera or a smartphone or whatever it is, somebody tells you how to use it, and you forget to read the manual. But don't you recommend that people should read the manuals on any new equipment they get?
Well, I suppose it's a good idea, but I am rarely a person who reads the manual.
Well, that's true. A lot of people don't.
Yeah, me neither.
I tend to think if the thing is well designed, you don't really need the manual.
That's why I don't know how to adjust my point and shoot camera.
That's right. You have to read the manual. But anyway, Yvette says that you should read it before you go. Because when it's really dark, and you say dead dark means it's so dark that you just can't see anything. There's no light at all. Then you forget where everything is and you say, oh, I have to read the manual. It's too dark. So you have to kind of grope around. Grope means to not know, be able to see very well. When you're groping for things, you can't see very well, but you try to feel where they are, right?
Right. And usually you use your hands to do it. So, you know, we say, actually, that's a phrase, you grope around in darkness.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think I'd want to be groping around my camera.
No.
You know, because You could really mess it up, mess the settings up.
Well, that's what they're saying. You have to be familiar enough with your camera that you can adjust everything
in
without looking at it.
Well,
right?
You know, when I read the manual on some of these pieces of equipment, though, I can't just read the manual and remember everything in it. I'm still going to have to look back and say, now, what did it say about that? Because manuals are kind of lengthy sometimes, aren't they?
Well, and that's why they're using this word memorize.
I know, but
you
that's
need to
not
memorize
my favorite
your
thing.
Camera.
Okay.
I love it. Practice, grope, memorize.
Yeah, right, isn't that right? But once you get out there, you find something to frame, like a tree or a building or people, and you kind of frame it with something, it makes a nice picture. The sky with a tree on the side or something.
So you see what that means is you just practice what you want to put into your picture. So
we do have some great pictures here that Yvette's husband took. Right?
Yeah, they really are very good.
Mm-hmm.
That's right.
And then they always have something that you can go into to get warm. So it says when you go inside, like a yurt, and there's a picture of that on the bottom of page 12. You know, so it's like a rounded tent.
Right.
Usually when we use that word yurt, we are thinking about Mongolia.
In northwest China, Xinjiang. I've been in a yurt.
Yeah, it says here. Actually, the specialized terms say it's from Central Asia.
I should have put that picture of me standing by a yurt. It's kind of fun.
You weren't taking photos of them.
Oh. Okay, but yurts are sort of tents, but they're tents that the Mongolians and everybody use, you know. And they're just kind of a round kind of a tent. Instead of an Indian type of a teepee tent, it's a rounder top.
Right. Yeah. So to me it seems like it has more ground space.
Well, they're,
But anyway, it says when you go inside don't take your camera in. I thought this was very interesting, and maybe most people wouldn't think about this.
No, I wouldn't think about it.
But why wouldn't you take your camera in?
Well, I guess because there's a lot of moisture in the air in warm places. You know, I remember going inside after playing in the snow, and you have all of this snow on you that kind of melts, and then it kind of comes off you like steam, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so when you go into these warm places, they must be pretty damp inside from all of that snow.
And they have little fires sometimes in the yurt, too, you know.
Right.
Yep.
So it's like, you know what it's like. It's like walking in from outside to inside if you're wearing your glasses. Mm-hmm. And that's what you're going to do to your camera.
And that's not good for the lens.
No. So it says wrap it in plastic or in a bag to keep the condensation off.
You better put it in the bus and not let the polar bears get it.
Yeah.
Right?
And I think the danger here is that if you take it inside and it gets kind of this condensation on it, and you go back outside, that will freeze on there, and then you won't be able to get the ice off.
So that's good advice then.
And you might crack your lens.
But after you take all these beautiful pictures and you do all of this, then what do?
You go home and make all your friends jealous.
Why are they jealous? Because you got to go there and you got to see these things and you have these beautiful pictures. Oh, I wish I could have gone there. Are you going to be jealous if Linda and I run up there and do that?
I would be jealous.
See, we could take him.
Okay, so we wouldn't have to be jealous. But,
yes.
But what they mean is show off these beautiful pictures to have, don't they?
Right.
Right.
Make all your friends wish they had gone along.
Well, you know, this Aurora Borealis has a lot of myths about it as well as facts, and we do have some of them listed here.
I thought these were quite interesting. It says the Inuits and Alaskan Eskimos feared the lights, some talking softly to fend off the evil spirits and others waving sharp knives at them.
I know.
That was pretty interesting.
Well, they are pretty bright. I mean, if you're looking at the sky and all of a sudden these lights come on, you kind of think maybe some kind of monster comes. I mean, if you don't know much about anything,
right.
It would be a little scary.
And they do move, too, right?
That's
they kind of
scary,
move
little
around
mysterious.
Back and forth, kind of like they're dancing. And so,
and they are very bright. You know, they're green and red and yellow and kind of a darkish blue, and they move across the sky.
What did the Europeans think about them?
Well, it said in southern Europe, they thought they were a sign that war was coming.
Now,
so
that's
kind of
easy to believe.
A sign of bad luck, I guess.
But, I mean, a long time ago, they didn't have all these terrible bombs and things we have now. Now I think somebody set off a bomb someplace or something.
But there they used to shoot remember, they would shoot fire,
yeah, that's
those
true.
Kind of fire things.
Yeah.
So they probably thought.
The Vikings probably shot fire things, right?
Yeah.
Mm. What else? What the Scandinavians thought?
Scandinavians, people from northern Europe, thought they were a sign of good fishing. And rich harvests. So they were kind of a good luck thing in northern Europe.
So those Viking people, they liked them, right?
Right. Well, I think they were more used to them. And then it says that the lights actually exist in an oval. Okay, so that's not exactly round or rectangular. It's an elongated circle,
right. Uh-huh.
About 1,000 miles from the magnetic poles of both the Arctic, and that's where they're called the aurora borealis, and the Antarctic, where they're called the aurora, I suppose this word is australis.
I just call them the northern lights and the southern lights. That's easier, isn't it?
Right. Yeah.
Okay.
I thought it was interesting that they have them on other planets as well. They mentioned that they've seen them on Saturn.
I thought that was really interesting.
Yeah, that
and then they have, you know, these sunspots we were talking about, a blast. It usually takes 2 to 4 days for these solar particles to reach the Earth. That's why they can say when they're going to happen. And that's why the scientists can say they're going to be and how long, how strong they will be.
It's just like we try to predict typhoons and other things and how the wind's going to be. So we do try to find out all we can about the world we live in and nature around us, don't we?
And usually, you know, the thing about the Northern Lights is you do not see them unless it is really cold.
Yeah. Yeah, no, and the weather
in
very
the fall
clear, very clear.
Or in the spring,
yeah,
you
not
don't
the
see
rain
them. It's
or
only
it's
really
very clear, and,
very
cold,
clear right. and very cold.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, they're pretty interesting. And thanks for being here to discuss them with us. And I think you could recommend that people try to do something like this. They might not have to go to Churchill, but be aware of these interesting things that are there in the world for us to see and find out about.
That's right. I've really enjoyed this article because it reminds me of those good experiences we've had seeing the Northern Lights.
Yeah, kind of me too. It takes me back to when I used to see the Northern Lights, and it was always very surprising when we saw them.
So enjoy the photos and read the article and share it with your friends and come back for a new article next time. We'll see you then. Thank you for coming today, everyone.
Thank
Goodbye.
You. Bye.
Thank you. Bye.